This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider. Pete Sampson, joined by Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley. It's been an active offseason. We're here to celebrate the 2-year anniversary of Notre Dame's Citrus Bowl win over LSU. Since then, not only has Mike Elko left, replaced by Clark Lee as a defensive coordinator, Mike Elston title change, but just yesterday here, he stand departed for the Chicago Bears, returning to the NFL in the franchise where he was the offensive line coach in the late 2000s, including a Super Bowl appearance. So it's, I think without question, Notre Dame's two best assistant coaches are now off the staff from a staff that Brian Kelly told me was he expected to return intact.
Just the other day he said that to you.
And it's been anything but for Notre Dame this offseason. I guess just first your thoughts on the most recent news, the Heistand departure. What was sort of your reaction when you heard
about it? Yeah, I told you, I texted you guys. I just came out of rehab. Should I turn around and go back in? I think that's a completely different situation from the Elko situation. I mean, Harry Heistand wants to be in the NFL, wants to be with the Chicago Bears, wanted to be with the Chicago Bears in a better situation than what was offered to him last year. I mean, Matt Nagy's got a lot of people excited. And so, I mean, I'm happy for Harry Heistand that I think that that's exactly what he wants. The timing's great. McGlinchey and Nelson are out the door. It made complete sense for him to make that decision. The Elko situation, obviously, is very different. Texas A&M's buying up everybody, including Jerry Schmidt, the strength and conditioning coach for Oklahoma, who I knew when he was at Notre Dame. After 18 years at Oklahoma. Now, you know, Stoops is gone, and so he doesn't have a tie to Lincoln Riley, but A&M bought him, just like they bought Mike Elko. So good for Harry Heistand, bad for Notre Dame.
Yeah,
good
for the Bears. No matter what the reason, he's not here coaching Notre Dame's offensive line. And that's totally agree with all the reasons for leaving. Didn't really think it was going to happen, but as soon as you saw why, it's like, oh, yep. All right, well, that makes sense for Harry because that's where he probably belongs.
He's got 5 years in the NFL right now.
He could go coach, draft one of his linemen, number 8, if he wants to, because it's not up to him, but they should. He should put it in good word for Q.
That's a good point.
Because, but it doesn't soften the blow if you're a Notre Dame fan going to the Michigan game that you want Harry Heistand as the number one guy to have in charge of your line, and Mike Elko was the number one guy to have in charge of your defense.
Well, and just like... there's no way that Notre Dame's offensive line can be as good as it was this year with losing McGlinchey and Nelson. There's no way that your coaching staff can be better.
Right.
I mean, I think Clark Lee has a chance to be pretty good. I don't think any of us really know him that well. If anybody's a disciple of Mike Elko, he is. But make decisions on 3rd and 10 for 13 games, and then we'll see just how good you are.
Talking to people around Notre Dame as far as Clark Lee goes, the feedback that I got on him is more that his personality is probably a better match for like what Notre Dame's about than Mike Elko's.
Oh, I agree with that.
Not that Mike Elko was not a really, really good assistant coach, but there's a good confidence in Clark Lee in terms of being able to command a room, have guys follow him, have guys want to play for him. I think as a recruiter, he's good. And I think as a developer of talent, he's good based on what happened with Tavon Coney last year. I mean, I think people would be short-sighted to look at Tavon Coney and just assume that was always going to happen. Because I think even Clark Lee didn't assume that was always going to happen. He sort of figured out how to make it happen with Tavon Coney. So it's, and I think Tim, you wrote this in sort of a column. It was the right hire at the right time. If this hire was made a year ago, you would be like, what in the world are you doing? But I think continuity was the box that had to be checked first in this hire, more so than at offensive line, where it's the guy whoever they hire will fall in line with what they're already doing. They needed somebody to extend what Mike Elko started.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's a situational hire.
It's a situation you were put in, though. So that's, and they reacted to it fine.
It is.
Both good points.
And there's no reason why...
No way it would happen prior, but no. This is fine.
I mean, you know, he's spent 3 years with Elko at three different schools. Is that enough time to know the system? Well, Mike Elko continued to make sure that Clark Lea was with him with every step that he took, and had Notre Dame not hired him as a coordinator, or somebody else had not hired him as a coordinator, he'd be at Texas A&M now too. So I think that speaks highly of Clark Lea. You know, you don't hire a coordinator so you keep Tavon Coney and Jerry Tillery, but it's a bonus. You have the yeah, if that happens, and there's no guarantee, because if they want to go, they want to go. Or one of the two.
I will say that...
The recruits, too. I mean, he recruited a real quality group of linebackers, and that's important, too. It was a situational hire, and I think under the circumstances, the right one.
You definitely don't do it just to keep Coney, but it's fair to say that if Coney is just totally on the fence and his defensive coordinator and position coach leaves, he could make a decision. He might not even be totally confident and be like, I'm gone. It's total makes complete sense for a player that's thinking about leaving anyway, which he clearly is, otherwise he would have announced his return. So it works the other way. Had he gone, had Clark Lea gone too, right. Your position coach.
The only way Coney comes back is if Lea is, yes.
And because of what happened with Elko. Yeah. I don't think that Clark Lea had to have the job, but Clark Lea could have stayed as a linebacker coach, is what I'm saying. And you could have hired an outside coordinator, okay. And Tavon Coney, but that's fine. There's some. My coach is still here. But look, they, as far as we know, it seemed they brought in at least three candidates. If you interview three candidates and you interview Clark Lea and decide he's the best guy for the job, we're not in that room. Add that to the continuity. It's probably the best choice for them, considering the adverse circumstances that nobody expected to have happen.
Yeah, I think the next step is obviously, well, what do you do with the safety position? Because if they went with Haycock from Iowa State, which we reported, that would have fit that dynamic of figuring out a guy who has some expertise at the back end of the defense. I think without question, whoever they hire to help with the defensive backs and safeties has to be more in the Bill Lewis, Bob Elliott mold of coach, where has seen everything, has schemed against everything, and is easy to get along with for players and coaches. Because they can't make a young up-and-coming hire at safety to pair with Todd Light. I think that would be a mess and a disservice probably to Todd Light.
Yeah,
even to pair with Clark Lea, right?
Yeah, and Clark Lea, right.
Yeah, and the safety position is, I mean, it's just difficult. It doesn't matter. As simplified as Mike Elko made the defense, which everybody, most players, maybe a couple exceptions, didn't excel in his defense, but pretty much everybody else did, even in Elko's system. The safety position is really, really difficult. And I threw out a couple names today. I threw out Jeff Burris just because he was there as an analyst. And, in his first year at Northern Iowa, they had 21 interceptions. But I think you're right, Pete. I mean, I think it's a difficult position to play. You need a guy that's seen it all and can adjust on the fly. And, the Jeff Burris's of the world probably, don't fall in that category.
No, I think in terms of the offensive line coach, you had mentioned Andy Heck, I think, on your Thursday Thoughts today. He'll be on the hot board that I'm putting out later today for just names to know. That would, I think, basically be your dream home run hire.
Because he's a Notre Dame graduate.
No, there's so many other reasons.
Yeah, that's like a bonus. Whereas it was the resume line that got Light, Denson, and Reese hired, it's just an extra with Andy Heck. He's, I think, just finished his sixth year with the Chiefs.
He had and 9 with years Jacksonville.
Six is the full-time offensive line coach, and then 3 is like the assistant offensive line coach who's at Virginia before that as a tight ends coach and then a GA. But, co-captain of the 88 National Championship team, first-round pick, 12-year pro, basically has everything that you could want in your offensive line. I have no idea how he would be as a recruiter. I also think the recruiting dynamic for an offensive line coach is brutally overrated. I really don't care if you're a good recruiter. I want you to be a good evaluator if you're an offensive line coach.
Yeah, and with offensive line coaches, it comes down to if you put out players that play well, you'll attract good players.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Harry Hiestand wasn't a great recruiter. Everybody knows that. But, I mean, you're right. It goes beyond Andy Heck being a Notre Dame guy. He's been in the NFL for 14 years. He does have some experience in college. I threw out a stat at you guys. Nobody averaged more yards per carry this year than the Chiefs. They tied with the Saints. He's got, you know, pensions coming out of his ears from the NFL as a coach and as a player. You know, and my personal experience with him when he was playing for Notre Dame. By the way, his last year at Notre Dame, he played for Joe Moore, who he loved, just like everybody else. I mean, mature, cerebral.
Who was a good offensive lineman.
Who was a good offensive lineman. Oh, he was also.
The guys who loved Joe Moore were good offensive linemen.
Correct.
That's the everybody we should call
No, Jimmy Byrne loves Harry Hiestand. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. We only talk to the guys that were really good that go on and play the NFL, and they tend to love him. Yeah, but I think there are a lot of reasons why Andy Heck would be a good fit. We'll see. Bruce Feldman floated the name Justin Fry from Boston College within the last, I don't know, hour or two.
Yeah, I mean, the guys that I think are worth mentioning or knowing about, if you are not inclined to read my story later today, I think Brian Ferentz at Iowa, offensive coordinator, offensive line coach. Now he coaches running backs, but right. 5-year offensive line coach there. Hank Fraley from UCLA, I think, is interesting. Played in the pros, not a lot of experience on the college level. Justin Fry, offensive line coach, Boston College. Herb Hand, offensive line coach, Auburn, formerly at Penn State and Vanderbilt. Andy Heck. Tom Manning is the offensive coordinator at Iowa State, also the offensive line coach. Jeff Quinn, at least you have to be aware of, analyst at Notre Dame. Ryan Silverfield is the offensive line coach at Memphis, where Chip Long was, but only 2 years full-time offensive line coach experience. And then Rick Trickett is at least a name to be aware of. He's unemployed right now, probably retiring, formerly at Florida State.
I've got your Bill Lewis / Bob Elliott choice at safeties coach. He's in his 60s. I guess if you're going to throw out those names, those are guys that are in their 60s. Chuck Heater was the DB coach at Notre Dame from 88 through 90. He's now 63, I believe.
Hmm.
And he's at Maryland. Really good coach. If you wanted to go that route, the guy with a ton of experience, Chuck Heater is still out there.
Dwayne Walker would probably be the guy that I would go after. He worked briefly with Clark Lee at UCLA, so they at least know each other.
Okay.
Has been a coordinator, West Coast guy, and I do think that's one of the elements that, as the staff reworks itself, taking Brian Polian off the West Coast as a recruiter, at least diversifying his portfolio, so to speak. Dwayne Walker has a ton of West Coast connections, having been at UCLA. Currently, he's with the Cleveland Browns, so you'd think you'd be able to pry him away from there as the defensive backs coach.
It's a process, Pete.
Yeah, you know, he's got, before that, 4 years experience as the Jacksonville Jaguars defensive backs coach, New Mexico State head coach for 3 years, and then UCLA before that, Washington Redskins, New York Giants, and USC briefly. So,
pretty good resume.
The dude has been around the block, and I think that in terms of somebody who would work well with Clark Lee, he would be high up my list. And I think, look, he's got an NFL resume. I think that would appeal to Todd Light as well. I think Todd Light could learn a lot from Dwayne Walker. So if you could take him away from Cleveland, which seems doable, that would probably be the guy that I
could
be
a pension issue too, I guess. But one last thing on Heater. Chuck Heater is actually 65. And like Mike Elston, he's a former Michigan Wolverine.
Mike Elson's still in tow.
Yes.
Assistant to associate.
Yes.
What does that mean? I have no idea.
No idea, but
he's
I'm sure
assistant head coach to associate.
I bet you money's involved.
What it means, yeah. It means an extra few dollars. You know, and I saw somebody take a shot at Mike Elston. You know, there's this very small percentage of guys that become head coaches, and there's nothing wrong with being a lifetime assistant coach.
Well, Bob Biakko should have been a lifetime assistant coach.
Yeah, he should have been.
He'd been a very successful one.
You know, and Mike Elson wants to be a head coach someday. That may or may not happen. But I don't think there's any shame in being promoted to assistant head coach, associate head coach, whatever the title is, and staying in a place for a long time. I don't think Mike Elson has anything to be embarrassed about.
No, I mean, I think he's an important part of the operation. Absolutely. Here, just like making sure the trains run on time. Like, there's a lot of nonsense that goes around Notre Dame, so you need somebody who understands that and kind of cut down on that. I think Mike Elston does a good job in addition to being a good position coach and a good recruiter.
I think he approaches his job. We've seen him on the football field. He approaches his job with professionalism and enthusiasm. He's an asset to Notre Dame.
The five best defensive lines Brian Kelly has had in his 8 years were coached by Mike Elston. The three worst were not.
There you go.
I mean, I know it has to do with coordinators and such too, but it's two different coordinators in two different schemes. And this year, who would have... Okay, I know Mike Elko gets a lot of credit for this, and he should. Who was the defensive line coach of what we said was by far the worst unit? By far, on Notre Dame's football team for 9 months until all of a sudden they weren't. Mike Elston.
Yeah.
He does a very good job at that position. And it would have been a huge hit to lose him just because Clark Lee got promoted. But that wasn't all that realistic, I don't think. I don't think he was going
to leave
just for getting passed over. No, I don't think so. I
think if he leaves, it will be, I can become a head coach with a more diversified resume than I'm getting at Notre Dame, similar to an Alford situation after 2013, 2014. In terms of other guys leaving, since our last podcast, Josh Adams declared, I think an hour after we recorded, and if you were listening, I said, by the time you listen to this, you will know what Josh Adams is doing.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask you, are you going to write any more stories about how everything is, like, the offensive line is optimistic about
God,
the future?
Thank God I got that in. Jesus.
The coaching
like an hour.
There were people that were clamoring for you to write that story. It's damn
like, fine,
good
here you go. Are you satisfied now?
The coaching staff will come back as the strongest.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the only story that's missing.
Notre Dame, unlikely to fold football program. Josh Adams is gone. That leaves Tavon Coney and Jerry Tiller. I reached out to somebody close to Tillery yesterday, said decision's still ongoing. I thought if there was a newsy tidbit from it, it's that he's two electives away from graduation.
Yeah.
So basically, if he comes back as a senior, he'll actually be coming back as sort of a fifth-year senior kind of guy and playing football for free, which would seem to indicate... That would make it more likely that he would leave. I'm not saying that makes it likely, makes it sure.
It gives him another reason to leave.
Gives him another reason to leave. I do think of all of Adams, St. Brown, Coney, and Tillery. Tillery has the most to gain financially by coming back in terms of moving up a draft board, because where there are a ton of sort of fast, tall, not flexible receivers, and there are a ton of running backs who are...
Wow, who are you talking about?
Yeah, there are a ton of running backs who are like, have a nice fifth gear, but like not a great second and third gear. And there are a ton of 6'1", 240-pound linebackers who can run hash mark to hash mark. There aren't a lot of 6'6", 315-pound, but run like your 250 and very flexible defensive tackles like Jerry Tiller.
And versatile enough to maybe play offensive
tackle. I really think he's a guy that could go from a fifth-round pick to a second-round pick. And if that happens, that's a real financial difference.
He has many reasons to leave, but football is not one of them. I think Jerry Tillery for the football field should come back exactly why you said that, Pete, because he can completely improve his stock. Tavon Coney, if he leaves, we're all going to say, damn. Because he is fun to watch play football, and Notre Dame desperately needs him.
It's like Carlton Scott leaving with a year on.
Is he going to have a better year next year? He could have a similar year, right?
No, he wasn't going to have 175 tackles.
Right, exactly.
Well, he could do it over 13 games as opposed to 7.
He could do it again.
Yeah.
But Jerry Tiller could get a lot better.
It's like Carlton Scott when he walked out the door and he had another year of eligibility. It's like, dude, why did you do that?
Coney was better than Carlton Scott, though. If I said to you, Coney's entering the draft, you wouldn't respond to me like my roommate did.
Oh,
we're
no,
at war?
No.
Because Carlton Scott should not have entered the draft.
No, I would agree. I would agree with that.
So, Coney and Tillery both be huge losses. Coney because I think he can be an All-American. Tillery because he's going to be a four-year starting nose tackle that could only focus on football for the first time in his life.
And it would certainly be nice to have an experienced 6'6½", 315-pound guy there with a bunch of real promising young guys.
Though Jerry Tillery will be the first grad student or senior that needs 3 credits that, for some reason, just takes a full load at Notre Dame, making it harder on himself, because all the other guys that do that, and happily announced that they have no classes to take their final semester.
Even Drew Tranquil was like, yeah, I'm going to probably dial it down.
Wow. I was proud of him to say good that, too. Yeah, he's been going hard for so long. He should ballroom dance to be his number one goal.
Before we get into our football-only questions in segment two, hoops. Since we all said they were going to get their butt handed to them at Syracuse last weekend, only for them to win.
I meant Tech.
And then fall last night.
Syratech.
At Georgia Tech. What do you make of where Notre Dame basketball is right now? Has really a lot changed from where we were a week ago when I said, are they making the tournament, yes or no, and we all voted no?
Well, the Farrell injury makes this North Carolina-Louisville swing look difficult at home. Good teams like Notre Dame and average teams of the ACC upset the likes of North Carolina, Notre Dame, and Louisville at home all the time, but not necessarily when they're missing their two best players, and especially Farrell, the playmaking ability he has. They would need him, I think, I think they'll play well against North Carolina, but then the talent level of North Carolina shines forth when you're missing Colson and Farrell. Louisville's a really rough matchup without Matt Farrell because they are going to press living daylights out of
him. Even if Farrell plays, he will be playing for the first time in weeks, right?
So I think the timing of the schedule really hurts this 3-1 team. If you could roll in BC and Pitt while Farrell's out, you're probably a little better off.
But they also caught the break of getting Georgia Tech and NC State at home to start. And, you know, okay, we all said what we said about them going to Syracuse. We were wrong. But we were giving Syracuse too much credit because that's a pretty terrible offensive team that isn't real well coached anymore. You know, I mean, their 2-3 zone is a shell of what we're normally, you know, what we're accustomed to seeing. They got guys that aren't chasing the play with the game on the line. So Gibbs throws one off the backboard and Pfluger's there. And you got two guys standing at half court for Syracuse. Notre Dame took advantage of an opportunity, you know, against Georgia Tech. I mean, they had a real opportunity to steal that one too. And they just couldn't play well enough. Pfluger apparently was sick. Maybe DJ Harvey was too. Pfluger missed 7 shots in the first half. It was another. I mean, back-to-back games, they had 19 points in the first half and at Syracuse and 20 at Georgia Tech. And, we've said this many times, you expend so much energy to come back and get in the game and then take a lead, it's difficult to hold on to that. And they just got outscored down the last, 7 minutes.
It's Georgia Tech's a fine team at home. They're now 9-2 at home under Josh Pastner, and that includes wins twice over Notre Dame, one ranked Notre Dame team. Notre Dame was technically, I guess, ranked yesterday, but they've beaten number 14 North Carolina, number 6 Florida State, number 15 Notre Dame, Notre Dame again. They beat Syracuse last year. They're a good home team. They're 9-2 with him. Notre Dame didn't have Colson and Farrell. If they didn't have Lammers and Okogie, Notre Dame would have won the game.
Yeah, Pastner's a good coach. I mean, he's a defense first guy, and then ultimately against this current makeup of Notre Dame basketball, you just don't have enough offensive weapons. Martin Gebbin, thank God for Martin Gebbin. I mean, he is.
Was it 18 months ago or longer? 18 months ago, he was stationary, right?
Oh my God.
Couldn't change
ends. We got him to start changing ends. I thought that was a big step at the time. But, I mean, this is a guy that, where would they be without Martin Gebbin right now? He was 16-9 last night. And
this is against a really good center in Ben Lammers. 2 games in a row. He's really improved.
Yeah.
But Martin Gebbin needs Matt Farrell to come back as soon as he can.
He's a fine fourth option.
Right. And unfortunately, they don't have their top two.
He's a functional big who can, run the offense now. I mean, that's great.
You know, and then here's TJ Gibbs coming off ACC Player of the Week, and you need him to play like that again. And that's just not realistic for him to string 3 or 4 performances together like that without Colson and Farrell on the court with him. He's another, Gibbs can't be the first option. He needs to be the third, and that's what he is when those other two guys are on the court.
Close game against North Carolina this weekend, Pete? Yes or no? We'll all be there. You say no? I say close. Play well.
Yeah,
lose.
I say close because we do it all the time with Bray. Okay, they're coming off. They lost. It's like, okay, they're going to string losses together, which happens. But I think they'll play, I'm not so sure that the North Carolina team will be properly motivated by the leadership on the bench.
We had two more months of the North Carolina. Yeah. They are the defending national champions. All these titles stink.
And so they're the defending.
And the year before they were
Roy. It's because of Roy Williams that North Carolina is so good. Is that what you're telling me?
Saying recruiting matters.
Huh? Yeah. Well, recruiting matters, but once they're already on the team. Coaching matters, and when they reach that point, then it's all about recruiting because they have the guys.
All right, before we go off the rails anymore here, have you changed your opinion, Notre Dame, on the NCAA tournament? Because we had three votes for no last week.
I'm still no in the same way I was, kind of bubble no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I spelled out a scenario on Thursday Thoughts. If they've got seven home games, if they could win five, that would get them to eight wins. And if you would just win two of the remaining seven road games, that'd get you to 10. And 10-8 with the prospect of Colson coming back, I think you can get in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, those are just numbers. Do I think they're going to win five out of seven at home? I think that's going to be difficult. Do I think they're going to win two out of seven on the road? I think that could be difficult too.
Yeah, I think I'm still in the no camp, but until they steal like a Louisville, North Carolina,
One of those steals would make a significant difference.
Very quickly, the next few games percentage chance to win from KenPom.com. Notre Dame 55% chance over North Carolina.
They were 70,
what?
They were 78% last night.
36% chance at Clemson.
Oh yeah. What about Louisville?
70%.
They were 78%. Wasn't it 78
last night?
73.
Yeah.
Okay.
Duke is 20.
I mean, that's just we're playing numbers games.
Yeah. No, it's just I'm just letting people know that's how the point spread is going to come out. Though this point spread will not.
I know. And Bray,
North Carolina
and
by
Bray
10
referred
like
to Ken Pom, which gives it credibility. There's no doubt about that. Nobody's talking
about.
Why
wouldn't I refer to something that says we're very good and we'll still win?
Well, that's true. Nobody says anything about the O'Malley/Priester prediction. Has he referred to that before? You know, when we predict at the end of each preview.
No, but Ken Pommy does.
So.
Yeah, well, last night we only missed by one bucket, so maybe
that
you
was
should.
A good.
So
that was a you. Yep. That was well done. You were
the team Georgia Tech is the only thing I'm able to hit so far. Yeah. One bucket apiece. Syracuse, I missed by 47 baskets. That's okay.
All right. On that note, that's it for segment one. We'll come back. Segment two, questions for readers next.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider, our Burning Up the Board segment. We start with a question from Irish by the Sea. Bigger loss, Mike Elko or Harry Hiestand?
It's a good question. I'd go Elko because I think he was harder to replace. Like, you're not going to hire a first-time offensive line coach to replace Harry Hiestand, whereas that's sort of what you had to do with Clark Lee. So I would go with Elko. He's the friggin' coordinator, and they had a really good year. There was something to build on there, whereas I feel like with Hiestand, it was already built.
I would go Elko because at the end of the Citrus Bowl, everyone figured Notre Dame's defense is going to be even better in year two of the Mike Elko era, and I don't know if people are all saying it's going to be even better just because they retained Clark Lee. I think Elko was like the... I know Bayless got most of the offseason credit, but Elko was kind of the... They are all in on Brian Kelly because he hired these two great coordinators.
Right.
That's a big loss.
Yeah, I would agree. It seems kind of silly, all three of us saying that, and Harry Hiestand, you know, a legendary coach.
Yeah, you need him when you're replacing your two best players on your football team, too, basically.
Yeah.
They're both bad.
I mentioned this on Thursday Thoughts. It always cracks me up when you know, an offensive lineman in Notre Dame says, Harry Hiestand's the best offensive line coach in the country. Of course, I've never played for another coach in the country, so I have no idea. But I understand why they say it because, I mean, they all believe in him. And do we have to say, I mean, I agree, Elko's more significant for a lot of the reasons that you said, Pete, that You know, you replaced him with a first-time coordinator, and you can't do that with Heath Stand. But
nor do you have to, because like
no, you don't.
Heath Stand but has built the position to good point of stature, I guess that'd be attractive.
I mean, I think the greater factor, the more significant factor, is the two best assistant coaches that you had on a team that turned things around and won 10 games and won a January bowl game for the first time in 24 years just walked out the door.
Good times. All right. Mr. McBrug wants to know, are the recent high-profile staff departures signs of program strength or program weakness?
The two of them, completely different. There's no sign of program weakness because Harry Heastand developed the line to the award-winning stature it is and then decided to go back to his dream of being in the NFL and made a business decision. It's not a program strength to lose Elko to Texas A&M if you're Notre Dame. So it's not a sign of a program strength there. Heastand kind of is, right?
Well, it depends on who they hire.
If they hire
Andy Heck, then it's a sign of program strength because it said, like what I just said, like the stature of the offensive line coach at Notre Dame is huge. It needs to be treated as such. If they make a lesser hire or a panic move, which I don't think that they will, then I would feel different.
There seems to be, well, I mean, just look at our board. There are way more candidates for that job than there were for Elko's job.
I can tell you, like, behind the scenes, multiple offensive line coaches, I think probably at least a half dozen, have reached out to Notre Dame about the position. I don't think that was true with defensive coordinator.
Right, and so they're going to get a good offensive line coach. Are they going to get is a legend going to follow a legend? Probably not statistically, but they should find a real quality offensive line coach.
Yeah, I mean, here's what we're talking about for offensive line coaches. Maybe is it somebody, the guy from the Kansas City Chiefs or the University of Iowa or Boston College, whereas defensive coordinator is it the guy from Iowa State or Army or a guy who's never done the job? No, I mean, it's apples and oranges between those two positions.
Right. Now, not that Iowa and Boston College are powers, but they are as offensive lines and running games. Yeah.
You know, circling back to that first question, it's not even close. They found the diamond in the rough young coordinator from Wake Forest who had only proven himself, Mike Elko, who had only proven himself, we're talking about Army and Iowa State right now, at Wake Forest.
Yeah.
And he was a great home run hire.
Yeah, he had considerable success in Bowling Green too.
But that's like saying Army in those places
and the
again.
U.S. Merchant Marines right, or whoever is,
found the guy, had to only survive one off season wondering, well, it's a step up. How's he going to be? And he was outstanding.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, you know, I saw some people say, oh, well, he didn't do a very good job. He didn't do a good job with the safeties. Come on, that's what we said about. That's what we said about Harry Heastand's not a good offensive line coach because Tennessee's offensive line struggled. We don't take the time to look at the composition of the Tennessee offensive lines. We just pass judgment on one little piece of information.
The people that say Mike Elko isn't a good coach because he didn't do a good job with the safeties are going to say Mike Bray is not a good coach because Elijah Burns is not stopping North Carolina's power forwards in this game. You know what? Some guys aren't capable of doing something.
Elko did a great, we talked about all year, Pete. Elko did a great job of covering up how bad the safeties were.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Kelly's opinion about Mike Elko's safety coaching was incredible. His response when I asked him, I was basically like, you saw what we had at safety, right? Like, and we ran a safeties-driven defense. That's pretty outstanding. You're right.
And I think, I think that's one of the disappointing things of him leaving because I think we would have seen a significant step up at the safety position.
Well, from different players.
Absolutely. Which but that's part of the coaching process.
Yeah.
And maybe it will happen anyway.
It will happen.
They will be better than they were last year.
Right.
Just by the personnel. We've talked about this before. You remember I said I'm not going to do tail of tapes if
safety. Right. If I was going to do that addendum tail of tape.
Brian Kelly preceded that comment to you, Pete, by also stating that the freshman transfer safety from Navy would have started for his team upon arrival at Notre Dame.
Yep.
Never in the history of the world has that been a thing.
No. And it's just sort of accepted as like, well, yeah, obviously.
He can run and tackle people.
Why wouldn't he start? All right. CMU Pens fans, provided he runs into no more issues off the field, do you see C.J. Holmes as the guy who will start at running back for Notre Dame, especially if Dexter Williams cannot figure out blocking schemes?
Tony Jones.
Tony Jones is Jones played all year. I mean, I guess I know where it's coming from because C.J. Holmes seems like more of a, you know, a 18 carry a game back than Tony Jones. But I mean, the question is, what can we assume it? Was that how it was phrased?
I was thinking if Dexter Williams see Holmes is in the same. Not
yeah, I mean, yet. I get what you're saying. Dexter Williams has been injury prone. C.J. Holmes probably has more upside long term, I guess, than Tony Jones. I don't think you want Tony Jones carrying 16 times a game next year.
No, but I like having all three of these guys involved. I don't think the one bonus of Josh Adams leaving is they may have to trust multiple running backs next year. Right. But you know what? Dexter Williams can't get on the field for reasons that aren't for sprinting. He's a good natural runner, but if you don't know your plays and you don't know where to be picking up blocks, it's hard to be out there, I guess. Yeah. I mean, we've made fun of it because it does deserve some derision that he can't be out there.
Funny next year.
That he can't be out there. But now Tony, I mean, the staff likes Tony Jones Jr. And yeah. Pete circling back with the staff postseason, they really like Tony Jones Jr. He did not handle his injury well.
No. I think with this question, it's, all right, how do you divide, let's say they had the same number of carries from running backs, about 350. How are you dividing those up next year? It's hard for me to look at Notre Dame's roster and figure out how you could find 350 carries.
That's a good way of putting
in
it.
Terms of health, durability.
Reliability.
I don't know, like, whether it's C.J. Holmes, Jameer Smith.
That's what I was going to say.
Deion McIntosh. I mean, Deion McIntosh and C.J. Holmes are suspended. Dexter Williams cannot get onto the field. Tony Jones has been banged up. It's difficult for me to look at the running back position next year and have a whole lot of confidence that they're just going to be able to field the kind of roster that they want.
Yeah, there's a question, you know, with every guy that we mentioned there. I mean, C.J. Yeah. Holmes is coming off of, you know, a very poor decision. Tony Jones, they weren't happy with his inability to deal with physical setbacks.
And he's a running back, so that's a problem.
Yeah.
It's going to occur.
Same way
he's
with Dexter. It's not a great situation. It's a good question. I mean, I know where you're coming from because we can't sit here and give you. I think, Pete, when you write 350 and circle it, it's like, yeah, that's a lot of carries for that group of guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason Josh Adams was such a critical recruit for them to get back. I totally understand why he left, but then that 350 would have turned into 150, and it'd be like, of course, they can figure out how to get 150 carries.
You know, this was one of the few years, though, there that they really relied on one. But having Josh, I think Josh Adams is only the second running back to ever go over 200 attempts.
206.
Yeah, and I think Sierra Wood was the only other one, and that was the year with Jonas Gray where they didn't trust him for a while until he ran over everybody for 8 straight games. But usually there's a little bit more committee with the Brian Kelly. That's why I was obviously don't trust the guys they had this year, yeah, because he usually spreads it out a little more. I mean, Deion McIntosh was second with 65 carries. Now, a lot of that comes from Brandon Wimbush being a runner. 141 carries for Brandon Wimbush. We did not forecast that coming into the year.
No.
That's a running back. That is like how many carries Sierra Wood had in 2012, about 141 carries. Think of it that way.
Yeah.
That seems askew when it's your quarterback, but they needed, I mean, he obviously had to do it. It was his best method of moving the ball. I just think the running game's going to look different next year. You're not going to have the one running back you hand it to.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to have
I think it's going to look different.
You're not going to have the one running back you hand it to. You. I think he's asking, are you going to have, let's say Dexter Williams gets it, is he getting 206 carries? He's not.
No, and neither is C.J. Holmes.
Yeah.
But we'll get a better idea of that when we get to spring. But, I mean, it's open-ended right now. JPF 505, do you feel decisions such as ridiculously difficult schedules with coast-to-coast travel and a Syracuse game at Yankee Stadium, which, from the fans' point of view, make it harder for the team to compete for a playoff spot? Do you think all that impacts Notre Dame's ability to retain or bring new coaches in?
No.
I don't think any coach has any idea they switched their game from home to Syracuse.
Well, it was suggested that Elko and Hestan, part of the reason they left was because
of
the switching.
People on the staff know, but I'm saying no one they're interviewing is like, so why did you guys decide to play that neutral site game in Syracuse? I've been reading all about that over Christmas break, and it's just,
yeah,
they have no idea.
I don't think,
so
yeah,
that's
I don't
not bringing
you think,
in.
You think Harry Hestan is a damn where they're supposed to line up and play a game?
No, that's not a possible thing.
You know, did we have we forgotten
it's
about...
still dumb to do. I'm not going to drive the question. So, I mean, yeah, let's, said, let's be fair.
No, we've said it every time we've had a podcast since the decision was made. But my point is this. Did we forget about how easy the 2016 schedule was?
I saw that you wrote about that. That's it. Just unfortunately.
I mean, what? So
Notre Dame was the easy part of everyone's schedule in 2016.
I mean, the last. Did we forget the 2016?
I was
2016 like, when
2017
when they went 4-8 against one of the easiest schedules they could. They only had three true road games. Their tough games against Stanford, or three of their toughest games against Stanford, Miami, and Virginia Tech were at home. They played Navy, Army, Syracuse, and neutral sites. They had home games against Michigan State, Nevada, and Duke, who had a combined 12 wins. I mean, the 2016 schedule was about as easy. Yeah. I mean, the 2016 schedule was about as easy as it got. The 2017 was about as difficult as it gets.
Right, right.
And as we look at, I mean, I'm not trying to, in no way am I justifying moving Syracuse to Yankee Stadium. But this team would have
ripped through the 2016 schedule, is what you're saying.
Well, and also the 2018 schedule, you know, there's only 8 bowl teams from this year as compared to 10, I think, this year.
There's some top heaviness to the 2018 schedule, though. That's tough to.
Yeah, I mean, Ball
to look
State,
at Rosie right now.
Ball State was 2-10. Vandy was 5-7. Pitt was 5-7. Florida State was 7-6. That's an anomaly. Yeah. Syracuse 4-8. I mean, I it's like I said, I don't have as much problem with who they play. It's when and where that you have a problem with.
Irish ND 23 with three assistant and with these assistant and associate head coach promotions the last couple of seasons, what is the end game for Mike Elston at Notre Dame? Is he a guy they consider to replace Brian Kelly?
Oh, he has to be a head coach. He has to be a head coach before coming
to Notre
Dame.
Well, as long as Jack Swarbrick's around, he would never hire somebody that doesn't have head coaching experience.
You should never hire someone that doesn't have head coaching experience at Notre Dame.
No.
Yeah, Brian Kelly had 25 years of it.
No, but it was done with Bob Davey, and it was that, you know, I mean, that was less than 2 decades ago. No,
it was
right
a resounding
about 2 decades.
Success.
Yeah, no, it was terrible. I mean, it was terrible. But again, it's like, okay, yeah, we talk about continuity, and I know it's different with a defensive coordinator, but at the time, it was like, well, this guy's been in the program. They got him from Texas A&M. I'm not saying it. I was the
angriest 22-year-old.
Yeah,
fan.
I guess I should have been a little bit more in tune with that. But it quickly became obvious that Bob Davey was going to make an excuse for every opportunity at every opportunity he could to justify why he was losing.
Speaking of the ability to recognize talent, he fired Joe Moore.
Yeah, that's not.
I don't want to go down that road, but that's how that era started out.
That's not a real astute decision.
No, but we all respect Mike Elston, but he's not going to be Notre Dame's head coach to replace Brian Kelly. He has to go coach and be successful somewhere, just like any other good coordinator at Notre Dame. You know, people were jumping the gun with Stanford last year. He had to go coach and win at least at Western Kentucky and time it out correctly, and not 6-7, which is what he was. You have to be very successful, I would think, at a lower level. I would really hope, let's say, Brian Kelly, because it's too hard to figure out guys on the top of our heads right now. So let's say he retires in 3 years. Brian Kelly does well and retires. You have to have a successful coach at another program, not just a guy you think can work. The job is the hardest off the field that there is, right? Managing all the junk.
It is up there, yeah. It's up there.
Not like following Saban would be impossible, but I'm saying just the actual, all the stuff you have to deal with at Notre Dame, it has nothing to do with, this guy looks like a sharp young coach. That's not it.
Put a percentage on this, the percentage of him retiring from Notre Dame or being fired by Notre Dame.
Or leaving Notre Dame.
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole NFL, why would an NFL team hire Brian Kelly as a head coach right now? I mean, every time that comes up, I'm like...
And it doesn't really come up anymore.
I'm not saying
on a message board. I'm saying just like, you never...
No,
you
know. No. Yeah, that's my point. I mean, that's just not realistic that he would be considered for a... But what's a...
I think there's a more likelihood that they would it would be like parting of the ways where it's asked. Like, I don't think it's gonna be like, we are firing Brian Kelly today or anything like that. I think it's, we have decided that Brian Kelly has taken the football program to a higher level than it had been the last 15 years. One of those statements, and he is, you know, we're moving on and this is a good time. And I feel like the program's in good shape. One of those situations.
I think that's how we're on too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they're gonna ever announce, totally agree like, with that. If they would have fired him, if they're gonna like fire him.
What does this have to do with Mike Elston, by the way?
I don't know. But I was just going to bring up Matt Campbell and what Matt Campbell has to do to further put himself in a position to be a head coach in Notre Dame down the road.
That's your guy.
I mean, I think he's got it. Pardon me?
That's your guy.
You know, I would stop short of saying that's my guy. But I think he's really, really interesting. I think he's done a really good job, not necessarily a great job. At Iowa State, although, you know, because, I mean, they had a couple major upsets this year and then still lost five times, so.
Yeah, they've got to be wary of the major upsets, but when you look at the final record, Tyron Willingham had some nice upsets at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, that you wouldn't.
They were playing a linebacker at quarterback or a quarterback at linebacker. I'm not sure what's what, but.
Well, okay, do you have a guy? Do you guys have guys to.
No, that's why it's a difficult thing. Yeah, he went to Baylor for some reason, was the guy I was thinking of for a while.
Now he's training.
Well, he might go to the NFL now.
Yeah, well, he should, because then he can come to Notre Dame afterwards. Yeah. Get out of Baylor. Two steps closer to hell.
That was a very unusual decision.
It was the strangest thing. That shocked me. But on a related note, Dashing Domer, do you think the recent events in any way affect Brian Kelly's longevity at Notre Dame? Not necessarily because he would get fired, but reinventing yourself again and again eventually has to take its toll.
No, I don't think it has any effect on it, because I don't think he has to reinvent himself after this one. You know, he hired Mike Elko, the sequel. Or at least that's what he hopes is the case. Yeah, so he's trying to not reinvent anything. He's trying to keep things going, which he should. So I don't think this is going to sort of change the timeline for Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. I think he sees it as sort of a... I mean, he said in the past, like, you know, this isn't a job that you have for more than 10 years. Well, we're getting kind of close to year 10 now. So I don't think this changes anything. I think it will make the next 2 or 3 years harder, but I don't think it's going to make it so hard that, you know, they're like, all right, that's it. We got to make a change. I think he's in year 9. Is it year 9? I can't remember.
It'll be year 9.
So he's in year 9. That's just kind of how it is.
Well, I understand your answer to that question. I also think it's a good question because, you know, and I obviously didn't do a real good job of writing a column right after the Elko announcement. But I think it reflected. I mean, I don't know that winning the Citrus Bowl was euphoria, but it was about as close as Notre Dame could get in the postseason.
The way they won it was also
it was 24 years since you had won a game on January 1st, and within 72 hours you lost the coordinator. I mean, it was kind of astonishing to me that would happen to this program that was, you know, I mean, just looking for some type of consistency where you can string some things together, which Brian Kelly hasn't been able to do from year to year. And so all of a sudden now you're dealing with that. And so I guess my answer to this question, you know, I mean, he doesn't have to reinvent himself, but certainly the optimism that you had in the 72 hours leading up to the Elko decision and then you throw in the Heistand decision, I mean, a lot of that's been lost.
It's a fair question because today is January 11th, right? Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Exactly 2 months ago, we were about to leave a hotel in Miami when Notre Dame was ranked number 3 in the country. It looked like the best team of the Brian Kelly era, the best team in the last 25 years of Notre Dame, favored to win at Miami on the road and be in the playoffs, and Mike Elko and Chip Long were vying inside the Goog to figure out who would be nominated for the Frank Broyles Award. And now we're talking about what we're talking about. Right. So things happen quickly.
Just think if you don't make that play against LSU. You know, I mean,
every game has that.
That's
why you don't want to play so many close games.
I know, but if you added that to these things.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's your point. There was euphoria for a fan base. That's as fun as I think every Notre Dame fan watching that game, that's probably their favorite bowl game. Unless you are everyone under 40, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Easily.
What are the other contenders? The Hawaii Bowl?
Sun Bowl is a pretty good time, right?
That
there.
Was
no, it wasn't.
No, but this is a memorable, this is an all-time ending bowl game for a Notre Dame football program.
Yeah.
Aside from, like, Alabama. I don't mean 2012. I mean, Robin Weber, yeah. This is a huge ending.
No,
it
is. I don't, well, okay.
And it was a remarkable play.
You were a teenager the last time they'd won a January one bowl.
Yeah. That was a while ago. So I don't really have any recollection of that happening.
Right, okay.
Pretty much I only remember Notre Dame bowl games that I have covered. And I think I have some memory of the Jerome Bettis Florida Sugar Bowl game. Okay. That's about it.
Yeah. I mean, I just, when the news on Elko was released, I could only think of bad things about the Notre Dame program. It wasn't like somebody said, the column you wrote this week is better because it's more upbeat. The news reflects what you write. And I thought that the Elko news sucked about as much as any news could at that point.
I would say it's not the same thing, but it's a similar thing. The last time they beat LSU in a bowl game, that was also a very euphoric situation, game-winning field goal. That team had no business really hanging with LSU. They were so banged up. And then a month later, Alford leaves. They reshuffle the staff. You're like, ah, crap, that's their best recruiter, the recruiting coordinator. That also dashed some optimism. Not nearly to the level of this. No. But they came back the next year. They went 10-3. It was with a backup quarterback. It's like,
we could argue that point again.
Yeah. So I just, like, you know, throwing dirt on the whole thing is, I think, a little premature. But I know a lot of people wanted to do that after the Heistand news followed the Elko news. And I understand why people feel that way.
And don't you, there was a cloud hanging over Notre Dame that day.
The Elko thing, yeah.
Yeah, no question.
Harry's just totally understood.
Okay, well, our journalism reflects the reality of the situation in Notre Dame. I'd just like to say that. All right, last question. We're running a little long here. FJ Cat, if I make a donation to the Irish Illustrated staff endowment, will there be a position called the FJ Cat Senior Editor?
Sure, why not, right?
I think it's at least a two-figure donation would be required.
Yes. Well, having known FJ Cat for a long time, I would be honored to have the senior editor.
The FJ Cat senior editor, Tim Priester.
Yeah. But
do we have official press releases?
We are for everybody. What's that?
Do we have official Irish Illustrated press releases?
I think I would apply for credentials for you as FJ Cat senior editor.
That'll go a long way. Position. But I would like to take this opportunity to say that I believe at this point we are looking for a sponsor for our podcast moving forward. So if FJ Cat would like to sponsor our podcast, one of our two podcasts moving forward, we would gladly welcome that. But if you want to endow the senior editorship, I will take all the proceeds from that. Thank you.
All right. On that note, that's a wrap for Irish Illustrated Insider. We'll be back next Tuesday. That will be a day after the NFL draft deadline declaration, so we'll know for sure what's up with Jerry Tillery and Tavon Coney. Probably we'll know more, maybe about the safety position, probably not about the offensive line position, and any other news around Notre Dame, because there never seems to be a dull moment in the offseason. So until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening.